We're going to look at James verses 19 through 27. But before I do that, and we'll read it in a minute, I'm going to ask kind of a personal question. And this is only for the guys, because this only works for the guys. Okay? Yeah. And this is kind of a rhetorical question, but I'm going to need some answers. First of all, guys, how many of you looked in the mirror this morning? Honestly, how many looked in the mirror? Most of us probably looked in a mirror. Maybe not all of us. How long did you spend there? I mean, guys don't spend, we don't spend a long time in the mirror, do we? You know, I mean, and how did that go for you? You know, I said to a girl at work, we were talking about iPhones, and I said, somebody ought to develop an app with like a mirror so that you can like check things out. And she goes, you just hit camera and reverse it and you can see yourself. And I was like, oh, I hate that. So a mirror would be bad. You know, guys, I mean, the older you get, the less you like mirrors. And as I thought through this, why look in the mirror if you don't intend to make some adjustments, right? You might look in the mirror. I used to comb my hair, but I don't have to do that anymore, right? I mean, but why do you look in a mirror? To make adjustments. You know, if you're wearing a tie, you fix your tie. If you're, you know, I hate when my buttons aren't buttoned here. And sometimes if I walk out and I forget, I hate they have these things like flapping around. So I look in the mirror to fix things, like fix my hair. Sometimes you pick things out of your teeth. You don't want to smile and have like broccoli in your teeth. Adjust your shirt, pull the long hairs out of my nose. I mean, there's guys will look in a mirror for, right? I mean, guys, right? This is guys only. We're not girls. I don't want to know what girls do. But the idea is you look in the mirror to make adjustments. Why look otherwise? I mean, guys ain't looking to make sure we're still macho. That's gone. You know, I mean, it might be when you're our kid's age. But, and so what'd you say? Yeah, you still look. Okay, all right. The young guys still look for, to make sure they're still cool. Yeah. So you look in the mirror to make adjustments. Mike, another question is, why spend time in the Word if you don't plan on it making you better? That's what this little passage is about. Why spend time in the Word if it isn't, if you aren't intending on making it better, making yourself better? And that main idea, I think, of what James is saying, because this is a pretty earthy, you know, down the earth section. This is what I think his main idea is. The implanted Word will make changes in your life. That's the intent of his section here. And he uses this whole idea of a mirror to talk about that. And we're going to get, let me just read it. And then because it really, verse 19 connects to the two verses above that. And then it ends, well, it chapter breaks are kind of weird, but it ends at the end of chapter 1. But I do think you got to, you know, nobody took his letter. It's like, you know, if you wrote a letter to your wife, you know, and people started picking and choosing verses, you wouldn't like that. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, that's what we do with the Word all the time. But let me just read this section. And think about what it, I'll start in verse 17, but we're only going to look at 19 through 27. So James writes to them, every good thing bestowed and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we might be, as it were, the first fruits among his creatures. This you know, my brethren, my beloved brethren. Let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For anger of a man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Therefore, putting aside all filthiness and all that remains of wickedness, in humility receive the word implanted, which is able to save your souls. But prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at it, at himself, and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. This only really applies to men, I think. It's kind of interesting. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man shall be blessed or satisfied in what he does. If anyone thinks of himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. There's these words about like unstained and filthiness. It's all kind of the same word, and we'll get into it in a minute. But you can see what James kind of applies this to this guy who looks into a mirror. I mean, and let's just look at verses 19 and 20 first. And when he says, "This you know, my beloved brethren," he connects it to the verses above. And the verses above talk about every good gift and every good thing bestowed and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. You know this. It's like he's saying you've experienced what God can do in your life. You know that every good thing comes from him. And the Father of lights, there's no varying. He doesn't change. In this analogy, it's like he's the perfect mirror. And well, I'll get into the whole idea of mirrors in a minute. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth. There's this whole section has to deal with the word and the word of truth, okay? And we'll get into that in a minute. So that we might be, as it were, the first fruits among his creatures. This you know, my brothers, my beloved brothers. So let everyone be quick to hear. Hear what? Hear the word. Be anxious about it. Go after it. A lot of times people take this out of context. You know, we could pound on each other. And most of our families probably have this issue. You have one quiet person and one talkative person. You're both talkative. Oh, wow, that could be a problem. No. But we've talked about this. I mean, Diane let me hear a thing about, did you read that thing on the internet about an introvert? Like, if she's not talking, I'm like, what's wrong? You know? And so you could take this out of context and say, you know, so the quiet people are really the important ones because they're quick to hear and slow to speak. So I'm out because I'm usually just the opposite. I mean, for me, these are tough verses. But what in reality is, this is saying to all of us, you know all good things come from God and the word of his truth. So let everyone be quick to hear. I'm quicker to hear talk radio and the news than I am the word. And what's more important? When struggle hits, it's like that's where we run. I don't run to Mark Levin and Hannity. And we run here. So be quick to hear. And I know it's kind of tough on Tuesday nights, but those Tuesday nights with the guys are pretty cool. You know, I mean, we're kind of just, you read the word, you go verse by verse, and we talk about it and pray. And every time I listen to it, something new comes out. I mean, we're doing the book of John. You'd think you'd have the book of John down by now. Let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak. There's a lot of the commentaries, you jump over to James chapter 3, verse 1. Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we shall incur a stricter judgment. There's this sense, somebody asked John MacArthur this. Are you ever nervous when you get up to preach? And he said, you know, those guys like do it all the time. You hear Ravi Zacharias or, you know, Chuck Swindoll, and they just, it just flows off their tongue. They might be used to getting up in front of a crowd, but if they better take this very seriously. And it's kind of scary. Reading James 1, or James 3, verse 1, is a little bit scary. For if you're going to get up and teach. So he says, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak. For talkative people, you know, that's tough. Because the minute somebody says something, I want to come up with an answer quick. And I have a little note here that this was my dad's advice. And I don't know if this was just his generation. Be sure your mind is in gear before what? Your mouth is in motion. I mean, he used to, you know, be quiet for a minute and think before you speak. Be slow to speak. And this is in the context of the word of truth. Be slow to anger. And again, we could take this out of context. It's easy to get angry. You know, it's out there in the world, driving on 9:30, getting on, you know, late for the bus, whatever. I really think this is, say something hits you. Say you're reading a psalm or you're reading James, and I've been reading it a lot, and something goes, hits you in the face. Like, Bob. And you can have a tendency to go, well, that's not me. And really, when the word, and when God uses the word to point something out in your life or my life, don't get mad. You know, that would be like getting mad at the mirror for the hairs in my nose. You know, in this analogy, that's, why would you get mad at the word? It's there to point out stuff that you want to change, that will make you better. So James says, with the word, be quick to hear it, slow to speak and give advice, and slow to anger. Take it in. Understand what God is trying to do in your life through his word. For anger does... For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Has anger ever, I think there is righteous anger, I think. You know, what would be an occasion that you, in the scripture of clearing a temple? I mean, that was like, this is my father's house. I think we can get angry. I think we get mad at the wrong thing sometimes. We get mad at God when we should be getting mad at Satan and my sin. I should be angry at my sin. Because the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. And I this is kind of another aside. I used to love football. And I think I've said this before. I made some comment to Kim one time because there was a female announcer. And I stuck my big fat foot in my mouth, and I said, I don't think ladies ought to be commentators on football. Don't say that to a female dentist, because they've overcome a lot of that hole. I said, Kim, what I really mean is, I don't think a lady, I mean, football is based on anger. I mean, it is, they teach you, they rev you up to be mad. You would have to mad and kind of stupid at the same time, to run into somebody full speed, you know, when they're running at you. But the whole thing is based on anger. And really, I mean, I can remember just getting revved up before. Does that accomplish the righteousness? And I know, I heard an interview of Landry. You know, how are you a Christian and in such a violent game? And he had a good answer. I can't remember it, but it was I like watching it. But we were just talking about that. Every game, it's on every play now. There's somebody getting carried off the field. Anyway, And that verse 20, when it says the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God, you know, I got to be careful. You know, chillax. That's a little bit, you know. Are you and I going to fix this whole government thing? Is it easy to get mad at those guys? I think it is. And James is saying, what are you going to accomplish? Is that going to accomplish the righteousness of God? And I wrote down here, it's like getting mad at the mirror. When the word shows us something, it's like getting mad at the mirror and what we see in it. Proverbs 16:32, and there's, that's why a lot of people equate James, it's like he knew a lot of these proverbs. 16:32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. The guys that, the next half of the verse is those that conquer cities. You know, I keep thinking that during the Gulf War and you saw Schwarzkopf, you know, that was a guy, that was a man, and you're like, and you see those Marines that are fighting over there, and you're like, any guy, when you're a guy, you're like, man, that's what I'd like to be, you know. But Proverbs said, if you're slow to anger, it's better than the mighty. Proverbs 19:11, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory, and it is his glory to overlook transgression. This isn't the verse they use when they're pumping guys up for the first kickoff in a football game. Don't if the guy hits you on the side, don't. But your discretion will make you slow to anger. Think about it. Think about it. And it is your glory to overlook transgression. When the guy cuts you off. There's even a commercial about that now. You know, have you seen that? Where, you know, a guy sees somebody hold a door for a lady. And remember, you know, I don't even know what it's about. Then, you know, he sees somebody hold the door and then he does something nice. And then somebody sees him doing something nice and he does something nice. It's crazy that a commercial has to tell us this. You know, when the Proverbs 19:11, it's your glory to overlook transgression. Don't get mad at the guy when he cuts me off. I'm dying. That's like a millisecond. I'm going to get to work a millisecond later because one car is in front of me. I mean, I can't believe I still do that. So anyway. When I'm saying this, it's not like I have this real easy time. I never get angry. And I think when James writes this, and I think what he's saying is, this is a pretty natural thing. So I got to tell you, be slow to anger. Your life will be better. Verse 21. He says, therefore, put aside all filthiness. Now, it's, you know, a lot of times people are thinking this is in the whole language thing, or just, and all that remains of wickedness. Put aside all this stuff. It's the same thing, where's my verse? In Ephesians 4, could somebody look that up? Ephesians 4, Lissa, who's doing it? Ephesians 4, 22-24. It basically says the same thing. This is Paul. Yeah, Ephesians.
That in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on this your new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness and truth.
It's like, you know, when you looked in the mirror this morning, I didn't go to the laundry basket and pick out the dirty clothes and put it on this morning. You know, that makes no sense. And that's what Paul was saying in Ephesians. You're new. You're a new creation. Why put on this old junk? When I'm angry, I'm putting on the old stuff. And that's all James is saying. Therefore, put aside all this filthiness and all that remains of wickedness. Put that off. Are you nuts? Why would you go slap mud with the pigs when you're a son of the king? Every time I think of that, I think of the movie, now I'm not going to remember, The Prince and the Pauper, where they look alike and they switch roles and they don't believe that the guy's the king. It's one of my favorite movies because it just reminds me of, like, me. I'm like, you're a son of the king. Everything in his exercise of his will has brought us by the word of truth that we might be the first fruits among his creatures. Act like one, Bob. Put off that stuff. And you know, when we don't, when I don't, life is not better. If we listen to this word, life will be not better. Not in the Joel Osteen better. Although he said some pretty good things, I think. I don't know. But it's not the power of positive thinking. It's not looking at your trial and go, you know. Life will be better because you know him. You know where it comes from. You know he cares for you. In humility, receive the word implanted, which is able to save your soul. And we just read this, and this is, again, one of my favorite sections in Hebrews. Hebrews 10:16 is a quote from Jeremiah 31:33. This is the covenant I will make with them after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws upon their heart, and upon their mind I will write them. Then he says, and their sins and their lawless deeds I will remember no more. I mean, now it's like, and it's kind of this, I don't want this to use it as an excuse. I have trouble memorizing anything. I love people that can memorize whole plays and stuff like that. It really impressed me. But you don't have to memorize it. It's been implanted in you. That's what he says. In humility, receive the word implanted, which is able to save your soul. He puts this in my heart. No wonder we have trouble with, you know, when we're doing something against the word, your heart and your soul will have trouble. And receive it in humility. Take it. Listen to it. Obey it. Verse 22 through 24. This is the whole analogy thing. To be doers. But prove yourselves to be doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. You know, and if you're good at memorizing, I remember Jonathan one time. Remember when in the old homeschooling days we'd have art or like talent shows, right? Do you remember the one time where Joshua got up and said, I have a talent, but I can't do it in front of you? And everybody, you know, because he drew, and he can't, like, sit there and watch somebody draw. It's pretty boring. And in those days, I remember Jonathan, he memorized the whole Ephesians and could, you know, and I was like, man, I wish my brain would work like that. But he says, you know, a lot of people think the Jewish world, the rabbis would have the entire Old Testament memorized, all of the Psalms, you know. And James is saying, but prove yourselves to be doers of the word, not just hearers who delude themselves. It's not, you know, it's not, we don't, and we're a Bible church for a reason. But it's not so that we can say, well, I know the whole book of Ephesians. Do you listen to it? I mean, and that's what James is saying. Don't be so, receive it in humility. And don't be just, and prove yourselves to be doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. And then he gives this illustration. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. And the whole idea that when we say mirror, I think of the big silver thing in my bathroom. Well, in those days, and there's three other times mirrors are talked about. We're gonna look at those, or two other times. Though the mirrors that they had were like, there's no bronze in here. Bronze is like you can take brass. Like we have a brass bed at home that my grandfather made, and when you know it starts to tarnish, but you can get brass pretty shiny. Well, in these days it was probably more of a bronze stuff that they would hammer, which would make it like not real smooth. They'd get it as smooth as they could, and they would polish it as much as they, and they'd probably have to polish it almost every day. And not everybody had mirrors. When I started thinking about this, I pass a mirror a lot. You know, when you see people walking by glass windows, everybody looks at themselves, right? Just check. Everybody does. They had no mirrors. I mean, the only people that really had mirrors were the upper crust. And the only reason you had a mirror was to make a change, you know, to see how you looked. And that, people didn't have bathrooms with mirrors in it. You know, and if you had one, it was kind of like you had to, it's like the funny mirror at the circus. You know, because it was a hammered piece of metal. So that you really didn't see yourself all that great. But James is saying, so if you are a man that looks in a mirror and sees his natural face in a mirror, and once he has looked at it and has gone away, he immediately has forgotten what kind of person he was. Oh, I think, and James understands guys. Only guys do that. You know, I'm looking, I go, psh, and James is using this as an example. If you're wealthy enough to have a mirror and you look into it, the reason you look into it is to make a change. Why would you have a mirror otherwise? Why would you look in the mirror? Well, some guys, but you want to see something. You want to make a change. And that's what James is saying. Why? This is stupid. Why would you look in a mirror and walk away and not do anything about it? That's what a hearer of the word is and not a doer. When you hear the word, it should make a change. That's the whole point of the word. It's like the mirror. It reveals what's wrong. So you can make it better, make yourself better. But he who looks intently at the perfect law, so he's making this analogy. So if you look at the law, the word of God, and the law of liberty, think of that Jesus made us free. He's going to talk about the royal law later. But the law of liberty, this is James. This isn't Paul. This is the law of liberty, that we understand we are now free. We are now in a relationship with the living God forever. You are his son and daughter. We are free. You look at that law and abides by it when you look at it and go, wow, I can't put off this filthiness. He has taken my filthiness and hung it on his cross. Why would I put it back on? Why would you do that? Why would you look in a mirror and think, gee, I think I'll put mud all over my face? I mean, it's pretty basic. It's like, people, if you think, you wouldn't do that. If you abide by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man shall be satisfied in what he does. It'll change me. It'll make me better. God isn't doing it to make me feel worse. He's telling me this, don't be angry, to make me be better. I look in a mirror to try to make myself better. You know, make sure my... Verse 26. Well, let's look at the two other places. I gave 1 Corinthians 13, 12. These are the two other places that mirrors are talked about. And it's really kind of cool, the analogies. Read 13.
Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known.
1 Corinthians 13, what's that chapter called? The love chapter. This is at the end of the love chapter. And Paul uses it. He said, now we see in a mirror darkly. He's using the analogy of this mirror. You kind of look at it and you kind of see your image, but you don't really get a, you know, in those days, it's not like the silver mirrors we see today. And Paul says, now we see darkly, but then when we see him, we will see him face to face. Now we know in part, but then we're going to know him and see him and know everything. So if you're, does life ever confuse you? Does it ever kind of be a head scratcher? Because now we see in a mirror darkly. Just wait. When you see him and you're going to have all these goofy answers or questions that I have are probably going to be gone. And I'm just going to like, I remember hearing Evie Hill one time, he said it's like when the angels in heaven and when they're saying, holy, 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 and they bow down before God and they look up and they see him again and they say, holy, holy. I mean, he's a black preacher, you had to hear it. I mean, it gives you goosebumps. But that's what it'll be like. Now I see this mirror and I'm like, then I'll see it face to face. Who's got, and then at 2 Corinthians 3.
2 Corinthians 3:18. And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit.
What translation is that?
NIV.
Yeah, the actual word mirror isn't there. It's like contained in another. But read it again. Read it again for me.
And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit.
Right before that, it talks about Moses. And when Moses would come down from the mountain, they had to put a bag over his head because they're like, wow, I can't look at him. He's so bright. And that's... Right now, we kind of have a veiled glory. But we reflect, you and I, when we leave this place, when we're at the garage sale and people are coming up, and understand, people you encounter every day, you and I are a reflection of who God is. Whoa. And there was a thing on, I don't know if you put this on the internet, this lady that was, did I tell the story? She was driving along and somebody cut her off and she started yelling and doing hand gestures that you shouldn't be doing and screaming at the guy and following him. You didn't post that?
No,
because it might have been talking about me. No. And so the story goes, she's following it. So this policeman arrests her, follows her, pulls her out of the car and arrests her, throws her in jail for like 3 or 4 hours. And she finally was like, what's the deal? It was just, it's not that big of a deal. He goes, well, I saw the bumper sticker on your car that said, what would Jesus do? And I thought you stole in the car. I'm like, pow. Because how many times do I forget I'm a reflection of who God is? And I really don't put bumper. I have one sticker on the back of my car. And my kids were like, why did you do that? It says happiness is being Swedish. And they were like, who puts stuff on their car like that? And I'm like, well, that's the point. You know, it's kind of stupid. That's what James is saying. This whole idea of reflection, and we reflect the glory of God. That ought to be a privilege. Don't make it be this ominous thing. I get to touch somebody who might be hurting more than me. Think of the world around us that needs people to say it's going to be okay. Congress isn't in control. Obama's not in control. Wait, kind of an oxymoron, I guess. We have a chance to reflect the image of God. And even says in there, you know what I mean? You know, read that. Read those two. 1 Corinthians 13:12 and 2 Corinthians 13:3-8 when you get home. And then he said, verse 26 and 27. I mean, and you could, really, when I looked at, you're lucky you're not in John MacArthur's church, because there were 3 sermons on this section, and each one of them was an hour long. So we're going to end earlier than that. Verse 26, if anyone thinks himself to be religious, and I don't want to get into the whole idea. What Christianity isn't a religion, it's a relationship. Well, please. I mean, the world is going to say you're a religious person, right? I mean, hopefully they think you're a religious person. And yet does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart. This man's religion is worthless. I'm not going to stick on the tongue this time. We're going to get into it. It comes up. James goes into a lot more about the tongue. So he says, you got to learn to basically bite your tongue. Be quiet. Don't be so judgmental all the time. Don't be, you know. I talked to my sister, to both my sisters. It was one sister's birthday, and the other one told me, so I was able to remember to call this one, because I forget. And this one thinks the Tea Party is nuts and a bunch of crazy people, and we need to get rid of them all. And this one thinks the Tea Party is great, and you know, so they don't talk. I mean, they try not to talk. So I had to bite my tongue with this sister, because I'm like, I ain't gonna get into this. You know, I mean, it's like, so it was better to bite my tongue, because you know, it ain't worth getting an argument with my sister when I get to talk to her once a month. So if you don't bridle your tongue, you're deceiving yourself. I'm telling you, these are not easy verses for me, because it's like, man, if you're talkative, you want to let some people have it. And James says, then your religion is worthless, dude. That's not one of my goals in life. You know, I think I want to be worthless. So I ought to listen. This is pure and undefiled religion. And I was driving back from golfing one day, and at 6 o'clock on, I think it's 6 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, they have all the old sermons of Criswell, you know, Criswell, Baptist, screaming. And he's doing James, and it's like, pure and undefiled religion. He's yelling, you know, and it's like, is visiting. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God is to visit orphans and widows. And he goes on and on. But our religion, Christianity, is about a relationship. These are two groups of people that are totally helpless, that will not, there is no chance, really, of getting paid back. There's almost no chance. It's not like, you know, now there's a commercial on TV again where a guy goes, oh, it's on the internet. A guy steals something, kid steals something, and it's in China, and the lady's going to arrest him, and the guy comes up and pays for it, and 20 years later, the guy becomes a doctor and saves the guy's life and does it for free. So so that orphan paid him off. The chances are, you go visit orphans. Hey, and it's not just, I mean, there are a lot of orphans in the world today with split up families. We have a new neighbor that has 2 little girls. No, not the, how old are they?
10
or 12. And when they moved in, there was a guy and a man and a wife. We don't see the guy too often anymore. Something's going on. And I'm thinking, these 2 little young girls are going to grow up not knowing a dad. So there's more orphans in the world than we realize. And Diane's probably sitting there, and I get mad at them because it's a mess. The house is a mess. Maybe God's saying, don't get so mad. Visit orphans and widows in their distress. And we were talking about this at lunch one time. You know, now it's like, my mom lived in an assisted living place. Once she became a widow, I'm like, maybe we ought to rethink this whole thing. Maybe, you know, we ought to live with our moms and dads, or have them live with us at a certain, I don't know. Visit them in their distress, and to keep one's, this is keep oneself unstained by the world. How easy is that? And he'll get into that later. We're going to get into that a little bit. I mean, and we've talked about this, but the world is not our friend. In the Upper Room Discourse, Jesus said to his disciples, in the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. The world in the sense of what it pulls us off to and makes us worry about it, makes us think about it, be angry about it. And James is saying, don't let it do that. Listen to the pure word of truth, that we might be, as it were, first fruits among his creatures. There's a lot better thing out there for us. So anyway, let's pray. Father, thank you again for your word. And as we, first of all, we just thank you that you wrote this stuff down for us. That some of these things are hard sayings. Some of them we might not totally understand. But Father, that you came into this world as a man. You sent your Son to relate to us. You sent your word to tell us what you're like, who you are, how much you love us, what you did for us, your grace and your mercy. And how you want our life to be better. Father, as we go into this next week, no matter what we face, whether it's projects or new jobs or our kids, whatever, Father, that we would be a reflection of your grace and your goodness, that you would, that we would remember that you're for us. Who can in this world could ever be against us? Thanks for your Son. Thanks for your word. Thanks for our church. And thanks for your grace and your goodness to us. It's in your Son's name I pray. Amen.